Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Jay King. Welcome to the Jay King Show at KBLA Talk 1580. Yep, I got another good one for you. Today, we're going to discuss American history. American history about the destruction of black towns in America. You know, there's been a lot of talk about reparations and slavery. And people always want to tie the idea of reparations being paid because of slavery and free labor in the United States. And I never want to get into that discussion because it muddies the water up too much for me, where there can be arguments on both sides, where white people could say, well, you know, I didn't have slavery. There weren't slaves in my family. And 75%, there's a 75% chance that they're telling the truth, because about 25% of the white population in the United States actually had slaves. But 100% of whites in America benefited from slavery. And when we start talking about slavery in this country, there is so much blame to go around, and people could argue that, well, if the Africans didn't introduce slavery by selling villages and different areas of Africa that they defeated to the Europeans, we wouldn't have anything to talk about. So what I've decided I'm going to start right here, Mike. So what I decided long ago was I was never going to make slavery part of my discussion, nor was I going to use the word reparations. I was going to take the word, and I have taken the word reparations out of my conversation, and I have taken slavery out of my conversation, because reparations is a word that is offensive to the white establishment, who we need to help get the debt paid that to us that's owed. And slavery leaves too many arguments when I can simply say that post-slavery, the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments give me the right to be a free human being, and the United States government violated those rights, broke those laws, and participated in criminal activity violating the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments and the Constitution of the United States of America, which I am protected by. And by doing that, I get to make my argument on what I think is a more solid ground, more like bedrock than hard dirt. And today, I'm going to further bolster my argument by talking about things that happened post-slavery. Even though the stories might sometimes start during slavery, what I'm going to discuss is after slavery. When I'm supposed to have the same inalienable rights as my white counterparts. And we're going to start the state of Georgia. And the year that the crime takes place is 1912. But the city that we're going to discuss was formed in the late 1800s. During Reconstruction. The town is called Oscarville, but today you know it as Lake Lanier. Yep, Lake Lanier, which is, as you know, a Georgia landmark. It's part of the state's landscape. But before it was that, it was called Oscarville, formed in the late 1800s during the Reconstruction era. What made Oscarville such a special place was Oscarville was a thriving black community full of carpenters, blacksmiths, bricklayers. But the number one trade in Oscarville was farming, because most of the slaves on the plantations didn't just pick the cotton or didn't just pick the corn or whatever the crop was. They actually planted. They actually did the irrigation. They put all of the essentials around it to make sure that the soil would grow. So while the rest of the state struggling in Oscarville, farming and the growth of farming was miraculous. I mean, they could grow anything. So the state, everywhere around them in the state struggled, but in Oscarville, the growth was miraculous. And Oscarville flourished until 1912. And in 1912, a young white woman by the name of May Crow, 19 years old, was found dead in the woods near Oscarville. And what they said is that she'd been raped. So back then, if a white woman was found or was raped or found dead, it would generally be in, near, or by a black community. Because then you can blame it on the black community. So a lot of white men would rape or kill white women and then drop their bodies off close to the black community. And then they would go get a posse and they would go look for the woman that they just murdered or raped and killed. And then they would find them by the black community and then they would create a lynch mob. And that's what happened in Oscarville. As soon as the night fell, a mob came together. They called them Night Riders. And the Night Riders came and they drove the blacks out of Oscarville. Just imagine you're at home, you're asleep, and all of a sudden, there's a fire outside your house, or your house is on fire. There's firebombs thrown in the church, and you hear the church blowing up. And because the church was the centerfold of the community, and anytime anything would happen, that's where everyone would go. Everybody would go to the church. Because everybody knew that this white woman had been found by Oscarville. Some people were at home. Some people were in the church. And the reason why they went to the church is because they felt a sense of protection in the church. But the church was firebombed. People killed, just burned to death. So what they did was Georgia tried to cover up Oscarville. People lost their land and their businesses. People lost their families. And after the destruction, in the late 1950s, the Buford Dam was built. And that's where they formed Lake Lanier. And what they wanted to do was cover up Oscarville and the history of Oscarville. because nobody wanted that history told. I mean, just imagine. Here you are. You know that it's coming because a white woman is found dead on the outside the city limits, but close enough to blame you. And there were some people that lived to see it. There's one guy named Bird Oliver. Their entire family was forced to leave their land. When the Knight Riders came through, they had to leave everything. And the main thing that they left was their property. And their grandfather had 100 acres. And the family headed for the Chattahoochee River. And you got a bunch of just an angry mob following behind them with rifles and fire sticks. And when they got to the bridge, they had one or two options. They could either swim or they could drown. And most of them didn't make it. But Bird Oliver's grandfather was one of them who did make it. He lost some of his brothers and his sisters. And sometimes his mother would tell him whenever his grandfather would recall that night, he just cried. And he and his relatives who survived, they settled in Gainesville. And that's where he married his second wife, Beulah. And they built the Beulah Rucker House and school. And that still stands in Gainesville today. And all the whites in the area took over the remaining properties. The Oscarville farmers were specifically skilled in raising poultry. And so when they went to Gainesville, they eventually became the poultry capital of the world. Other movers and shakers also sharing the story had a hard time talking about it. It was shame to them. This could happen to their families, and there was nothing they could do about it. This is the history of America. This is American history. You are the fabric of America. This is your history. You're tuned into the J. King Show on KBLA Talk 1580. When I come back, I got another story for you that's going to really blow your mind. You're tuned into the J. King Show. We'll be right back.
Oh, make me want to holler the way they do my life.
How was that? How many minutes do I have on this next one? Okay. You're tuned into the J. King Show at KBLA Talk 1580. My name is J. King. Good afternoon, everybody. You know, I'm sorry. Let me do it again. You're tuned into the J. King Show, KBLA Talk 1580. My name is J. King. Good evening, everyone. In case I didn't tell you who I was and why I do this show, I am the president of the California Black Chamber of Commerce. I am the creator, and producer, and writer, performer with Club Nouveau, and I do radio here in Los Angeles at KBLA Talk 1580 and also in Sacramento at 97.5 FM KDEE Monday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. You can go to kdeefm.org to hear me there, or you can look for me on TuneIn at KBLA. You can look for me on TuneIn at 97.5 FM KDEE. Today we're talking about the history of America and the destruction of black towns in America's history. And I just told you the story of Oscarville in Georgia, where Lake Lanier now sits, because Oscarville is up under Lake Lanier. Now I'm going to tell you about a story in Alabama. In the 1800s, a black man from Alabama named John Benson got from under the thumb of slavery as a free man. He didn't run away. He was a free man. And he traveled across state lines to save his sister. Then he became a wealthy man who founded a black community on the same land where he was once a slave. But that's just half the story, because his son would continue his legacy by building a school as well as the first black-owned railroad in the United States. And you've probably never heard of either of them. And the majority of this story is steeped in the truth. But because of any remnants of the once flourishing town, it was drowned under one of the largest lakes ever made, Lake Martin, which is located in Tallapoosa, Elmore, and Coosa counties in Alabama, was created in 1926 after the construction of the Martin Dam. So this enormous lake is almost 700 miles of shoreline, and it covers 41,000 acres. The dam is used to generate hydroelectric power for the Alabama Power Company. And because of its size, Lake Martin is a very popular tourist destination, and it even hosts events throughout the year. But before there was a lake there, there was John Benson and his small black community near Kawalinga Creek. John Jackson Benson was born on September in 1850 on the shores of Kawalinga Creek in Alabama. His slave owner was James Benson, and he owned a plantation in Alabama near Kawalinga Creek. So there's barely any mention of John's mother or his father, but there are a few things that we know. And the reason why is because our history wasn't that important then, but it's so important now to tie up the loose ends of America. Now, the one thing we do know is this. If John was born a slave, it's because his mother was a slave, because the child followed the mother. So if John's father was a slave, but his mother was a free woman, John would have been born a free man. So we know his mother was a slave. We also know John had a sister that he was very fond of, who was sold to a plantation in Florida. And in the 1850s, it wasn't uncommon for slave owners to birth children with black women they kept in bondage. In other words, it would not be uncommon for a slave owner to have sex with a slave woman and then sell the children they had sex with to other plantations. Now, we don't know if James was John's father, but that wouldn't be far-fetched either. So once James Benson died, the slave owner, his estate was divided among his family. And John Benson was sent to Talladega, Alabama, to work as a slave for an heir. In 1861, the United States started the Civil War, and the Civil War would last for about 5 years. By 1865, things would change for John, and all he needed was a little opportunity. He was freed after the Civil War, and he was given a mule. And after Congress passed the Confiscation Act of 1861, Union generals would often confiscate property from rebels after a battle and give it to the freed slaves. And now that John was free, he knew he was the only one who could save his sister. So with his newly acquired mule, John headed for Florida. He wanted to bring his sister home so they could start a new life. But John also knew that a young black man traveling alone right after the end of the Civil War was a death wish. He knew that he could be killed, but he didn't care. He went anyway. He put his life in jeopardy every day. But John searched through the plantations of Florida for an entire summer until he finally found his sister. And with a new life ahead of him, the two of them went back to Alabama to start anew. Now, the Benson Plantation was home to John. And although he was a slave growing up on the Cowaliga Creek, the land still meant so much to him and his family. And if he wanted that land, he needed money. And the best place to get money at that time was in Shelby County in the coal mines. And we're talking about the early 1900s. And coal was big business in the area. Thousands of miners worked in mines and cities that were scattered across Shelby and Bibb County. So John moved to Shelby, and he worked the mines for 60 cents a ton. And he never stopped working. He worked until he finally saved up $100. Now, it might not seem like much, but it was enough for him to leave the coal mines behind and get back to Cowaliga. And he used the money to buy some land from his former slave owners, from their estate. And then he started working that land. And for the next 10 years, John Benson would slowly acquire more land from his former slave owner's estate. And by 1890, he owned 160 acres of land. A black man, born a slave, only to years later buy the land that he was once slaving over. This was the epitome of poetic justice. But John Benson didn't stop there. Because of the lack of slave labor after the Civil War, a lot of white farmers didn't have enough manpower to work their a lot of white men didn't have enough manpower. Let me do this one time. Let me fix this, John, then we'll come out. I mean, on mic. A lot of white farmers didn't have enough manpower to work their large plantations And this is where John saw an opportunity. When we come back, we're going to talk about his opportunity. You're tuned into the J. King Show at KBLA Talk 1580.
Okay, yeah, no problem.
Okay. Is that cool? So you can fix that, right? How many minutes I have on?
Absolutely. Well, we have a 9, a 4.5, and a 4.5.
Okay, perfect. That's enough.
Okay.
You ready? It's the J. King Show at KBLA Talk 1580. My name is J. King. We're talking about American history and some of the criminal activity that took place in this country, even by our own government. And right now we're talking about John Benson, a former slave who was now in pursuit of changing his life, who's just come back from the area that he once lived in as a slave. And now he's slowly but surely acquiring the property that he once was a slave on. He's now acquiring it as an owner. And because of the lack of slave labor after the Civil War, a lot of white farmers don't have enough manpower to work their plantations, and their plantations are large. So John saw more opportunity, and each year he bought more land. And John also paid workers. He used black and white labor. And by 1898, he had amassed 3,000 acres of land. 3,000 acres in 1898. On his land, he built a huge farmhouse. He built a brickyard. He built a sawmill. He built a cotton gin. He built a compression gin. And then in the community, he produced corn, cotton, sugar, and a lot of different types of woods. And over 40 families were now housed on his land. And John's new fortunes allowed him to become the local bank. So he started bankrolling mortgages for white and black buyers. He also started lending money to his white neighbors. Here's a guy who was once a slave, who's now a rich and powerful man with generational wealth. All three of his children went and got a college education, which was rare for a black family in the 1800s. John Benson had accomplished so much, and his son, Will, would continue to build on his father's legacy, that William Benson, who was born in 1873 to John and his wife, Julia Benson, grew up watching his father build the community that he grew up in. His other son, young John, wanted to follow in his dad's footsteps. So like his father, Will valued education. He first attended Fisk University in Nashville, Tennessee, but eventually he graduated from Howard University in 1885. After college, William brought his education home, and he started to build on the community that his father had and his family had built. And William believed for his community to thrive, they needed education. So while he was in college, he created a plan to build a school on the grounds of his family's land. And William wanted to raise the standard of living for his community by teaching them to read, training them in industrial skills, as well as building moral character in the children. So William took his idea to his father. And his father agreed to give his son 10 acres of land to build a school. But a black man's ambition in the late 1800s, early 1900s, doesn't go unnoticed by the white folk in the area. And in 1896, somebody set fire to a store. And when they set fire to a store, they burnt a lot of his possessions. And they thought that it would scare William, that it would make him nervous, that it would make him back down from building his school, but it didn't. It didn't waver. He didn't move. He kept working. And the Coweliga Academic and Industrial Institute was incorporated in 1898. The school educated young black children in the community for almost 40 years. He even had a board of trustees, which included Booker T. Washington and Oscar Garrison Villard. In 1913, Coweliga Academic had over 300 students, a modern library, a band, a YMCA, and a YWCA. Students learned and valued skills in agriculture and science. Some learned how to be blacksmiths and cooks. Others learned how to sew and basket weaving. But it was truly a blessing for the community of blacks who had no other means of education. And Will, like his father, never stopped dreaming big. And while he and his school were thriving, Will had goals on bringing a railroad to his community's doorstep. In 1900, he founded the Dixie Industrial Company, which produced lumber and processed cotton. The company had customers all over the world. But the railroad would be short-lived because here comes World War I, and World War I changed the landscape of shipping products and goods overseas. And William Benson, unfortunately, died in 1915 before his father from a lingering illness. Coweliga would continue to shape young minds for decades after his death. And then John Benson, the father, died on November 3rd, 1925. Benson's town and Coweliga School was an amazing display of fortitude and perseverance, but it didn't last forever. You see, America's evolution swallowed it up. America's evolution swallowed up a lot of the black history in this country. The Alabama Power Company started constructing a dam, the Martin Dam, in 1923. And once it was completed in 1926, the dam created heavy upstream flooding. And that flooding sunk the town of Benson, Susana, and some of the Native American lands. And so now what it does is it leaves us with a bewildered wonderment of what could have been, what could have happened if the Coweliga School and the town that was created by John Benson and his family was given an actual chance to survive. What would have happened? So regardless of what happened to this town, what we can't do, what we shouldn't do, what we mustn't do is let its history and its memory die. And we need to give praise to the two founders of black excellence that was put on display even during the worst times for African Americans in this country. This is a America's history. My name is Jay King, and you're tuned into the Jay King Show at KBLA Talk 1580. We'll be right back. Okay.
At some point, we do need to do charter school, but we can keep going.
Yeah. Okay, no, we'll do charter school right now. You ready? This show is sponsored by Highlands Community Charter School. If you're 22 years or older without a high school diploma, Highlands Community Charter School is where you ought to be. Not only will they help you earn your high school diploma, they'll help you find a career pathway, and it doesn't cost you a dime, just time and effort. 916-844-2283 is the number. 916-844-2283. And remember, it's never too late to get your life in order. You're tuned into the Jay King Show at KBLA Talk 1580. Yeah. Dealing with the history of America. More importantly, dealing with the history of the treatment of African Americans in this country. You know, a lot of people say, you know, that was a long time ago. We have to let the past be in the past. But it's difficult to let the past be in the past when it still has an effect today. And, you know, sometimes when I'm talking to black folk, I always say, do you want to win or do you want to be right? Because if you want to win and you start talking about racism, bigotry, prejudice, and bias in this country, there's not going to be a time when you don't win or when you're not right. I'm sorry. There's not going to be a time when you're not right. You're going to be right whenever you speak about those things, because the truth of the matter is these things happened and this country hides its criminality. But it's not going to help us win. And having a chip on your shoulder ain't going to help you win. Having a concise plan on how to get to a space where we can have these discussions so our fellow Americans of all races, creeds, and colors can come together and say, pay this debt for the crimes that you committed against my fellow man, my fellow brother, my fellow sister. Because I believe most people are decent. And decent people will hear these stories and be appalled, shocked, and disgusted by the actions this country and this government. And that's why I do the shows, not to make you mad, not to discombobulate you, but really to empower you, for you to know how powerful you have to be to stand strong today, to still be here with all of the rocks and boulders and discrimination and hate and murderous activity that's been piled upon you and your community. It didn't just happen in one part of the country. It didn't just happen in one era. It happened all over the country in every era. And the crimes that took place, you'll never know about them because they've been hidden. These are just the ones that we can find. So you have to know that for every one you find, there's 100 that have been hidden, because this is the mindset of the day. There's nothing unnatural about what's happening here. That's why it's so common. That's why these stories are in the thousands, if not millions. Anybody ever heard of Seneca Village? Seneca Village started in 1825 and at its peak spanned from 82nd Street to 89th Street along what is now the western edge of Central Park in New York City. By the 1840s, half of the African Americans who lived there owned their own property, which was five times the rate higher than in the whole city. In 1857, Seneca Village was torn down for the construction of Central Park. The only thing that remains is a commemorative plaque dedicated in 2001 to the Lost Village. That's who America is. That's what America is. This is American history. My name is Jay King. You're tuned into the Jay King Show at KBLA Talk 1580. We'll be right back.
That went a little bit, a minute longish.
Okay. So how many minutes do I have here? Like three?
Three and a half.
Okay. You ready?
By
I was born and raised down in Alabama. On a bum whip.
You're tuned into the Jay King Show at KBLA Talk 1580. My name is Jay King, and we're about to wrap this thing up. But I don't want you to believe that all these stories only took place in southern states, because they took place in southern states as well. As a matter of fact, in the state of Oregon, up until sometime around the 1930s, blacks couldn't live in the state of Oregon. But there was once a city called Vanport, Oregon. And in the 1940s, Vanport was the center of a booming shipyard industry because of World War II. And it quickly became the second largest city in the state of Oregon. But as World War II saw white males drafted and going overseas, there was a labor shortage. And that pulled in the great migration of blacks from the South. So with soldiers being drafted to go overseas to fight in the war, with Oregon seeing a labor shortage, now you have black folk migrating from southern states. Now these new workers need a place to live. So as the Albina neighborhood was the only place where black people could live legally, that became too small for the growing population of black Americans that were coming from the southern states. And that's when they built Vanport. And they built Vanport as temporary housing. It was just a solution, temporary housing. And at its peak, 40,000 residents, or 40% of Vanport, were African American. But then in 1948, they had this massive flood that erupted in the neighborhood. City officials didn't warn the residents of the high water levels that was happening in their levees. And so a lot of people didn't evacuate because they didn't know. And the levees broke. And within a day, 18,000 500 families were displaced. More than a third of the black Americans that lived in the city. Wiped out, some killed, some moved out, others placed. Well, today, that area is known as Delta Park. So whenever you're in Oregon, search for Vanport, Oregon, or search for Delta Park. There's a lot of history there. There's a lot of history on the grounds that we walk on that are under your feet. And a lot of it isn't kind or good history. Proclaim your history. Be proud of your heritage. The Black American legacy depends on it. This is why the debt is owed. My name is Jay King, and you've been listening to The Jay King Show on KBLA Talk 1580. Good night. You came to me, I came back to you, and now we're doing things together behind our lovers. I had another when I met you, but you said it was cool. Now you want to be my lady. I'm your fella, and we're lovers stuck together. Secret rendezvous. What kind of love? This is one of my favorite songs that we did. We might have to do that in our show. Love beat the hell out of me. Yes. Hey, Janet Marie. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. If you guys want to really hear the show and what it's going to sound like, download the KBLA Talk 1580 app or go to iHeartRadio.com, download that app, and search for The Jay King Show, and all my shows are there. So thank you guys for tuning in. What are they saying?
I have loved this group since I was a child. Now I have a child who has a child. My son learned the drums and can play the song, the beat, like nothing. He knows the song like he wrote it.
People talking, rumors starting. Who told somebody, now they're suspect of us. What kind of love?
This song don't get the recognition it deserves. It's still a bop in 2022. Great stuff. Good show.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, we got anything else?
No, I'm good. I'm on Facebook.
Okay.
I don't lose it.
Okay. All right. Okay. So I'm going to hang it up.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks,
Jay. Thank you.
Bye, everybody. They're gone already. They already gone, Mike.
Great stuff.
Yeah, I hung them up already.
Okay, hey, cool.